The opinions expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Fun, the For Us Network.
Please fasten your seatbelts.
Hello and welcome to Sock It to Politics. I'm Ed DeSock. Joining me today is Samantha Eamon. Hello, Sam. How are you?
How's it going?
Aaron Seale is taking a sabbatical for a few weeks, and we have no bloody idea where Hafiz Noorani is. Hafiz, are you out there? Hello, hello, hello.
We lost him.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to start a new book line. Where in the world is Hafiz Noorani? Actually, maybe we'll do like, where's Waldo? Like there's a bunch of pictures of people and somewhere you have to find Hafiz Noorani. Because I don't know where Hafiz Noorani is. Called him twice, didn't answer. He's not here. It's unlike him to be here. I hope he's not ill. I hope there's nothing, he didn't hurt his knee again or some nonsense. But assuming that he's okay, shame on you. Shame, Hafiz. So we're going ahead without him. Just me and Sam. We don't need anybody else, do we?
Nope, we don't need anybody else.
All right. And so there are significantly less people here in this podcast than gathered outside Adamson's Barbecue in Etobicoke, Ontario, in defiance of the lockdown. This restaurant that serves authentic Central Texas barbecue, apparently. I don't know how it can be authentic Central Texas barbecue when you're not in Central Texas. It could be Central Texas-like. It could be, reminiscent. But, you know, you can't actually have authentic Texas barbecue if you're not authentically in Texas. So there's already a problem. But that's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is the province has ordered the city of Toronto to lock down. It ordered in-house dining, indoor dining closed. And the other restaurants have obeyed to their economic detriment. They understood the nature of the sacrifice and they closed down. They're open for curbside pickup, which, a lot of restaurants, there's restaurants near me. I don't know about you, Sam, there's restaurants near me that are so busy with curbside pickup. They're busier than if they had people inside, because they can serve people faster with takeout and curbside pickup. So other restaurants are obeying it. He opened on Tuesday, which was where he was supposed to be closed, and the police went and had a talk with him. They didn't close him down. They just had a talk with him, and
this
he decided
a chat. Yeah,
a nice little chat, and then public health took the step of ordering them to be closed. And he opened again anyway. And the police at the time of this recording, there are a lot of police there and they're supposedly quote unquote negotiating with him. And as people have pointed out on Twitter, if this man was of a different color, I don't know that they'd be negotiating with him. I'm not sure, we can never be sure, but we can intuit that people of color are treated without the same level of courtesy as they're showing this guy. What are your thoughts, Sam?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think it is true. I think if this were, something like a BLM protest or something like that, the police would have a very different attitude. And it's just the way that they're kind of going about it, where they're going there, but they're kind of saying, oh, there's not much we can do. Well, yes, there is. You can empty the area. You can shut down the business, make sure no one else goes in there. And I mean, people can still protest, absolutely, but you should keep a presence there and you should make sure that no one's actually patronizing the business once it's been shut down.
Well, the notion that they said on Tuesday, they said that they didn't feel it was safe to try to get 100 people out of the restaurant. It's like, what are you talking about? We're Canadians.
You tell them to leave.
Yeah, you go in and say, Canadians, leave the restaurant. And the Canadians will leave the restaurant. They're not willing to be arrested for barbecue. I mean, maybe some of them are to try to prove a point. Point being, they're morons. But
there are a bunch of people. And I think this is honestly, I'll put on my conspiracy theory hat for a second. It's not really a conspiracy theory, but I don't think that business as usual was really the goal of this. I think this was meant to be a political statement. And it did draw in certain groups and certain almost radicalized people who are very anti-mask. They're very like kind of like COVID is a conspiracy. There were people, I have video of that I'm seeing of people waving the flags for a group called The Line, which
what
are-
What the hell is that group? The
so
Line.
They're a grassroots group who believe that, you know, COVID is essentially not real, that masks infringe on their freedoms. Those kinds of people that say that the government is overstepping themselves in terms of the COVID virus, and, you know, just kind of keeping the people down. Like, if you look at the front page of their website, their thing is, you are the revolution. Resist oppression and tyranny.
I love how wearing a mask is tyranny.
But you wear a scarf every day in the winter in Canada and it's fine, but all of a sudden it's a mask and,
well,
and
these people who they don't understand what tyranny is. They are such pussies that, I'm sorry for the gendered insult, they are such pussies that they think that having to wear a mask is tyranny. They've never lived under tyranny. There are people in this country who've come here from other countries who understand what tyranny is. There are people who come from countries where if you speak up or say the wrong thing, your neighbor reports you and you disappear in the night and you're never heard from again. That's tyranny. This is not tyranny. This is a public safety, public health concern. These people who talk about tyranny, they are the most coddled snowflakes possible. The right always calls the left snowflakes, but the biggest snowflakes around are on the right, always crying about one thing or another, crying about tyranny. Businesses have to be shut down. Government says businesses shut down. It's tyranny. It's not tyranny. It's a public health crisis. These people don't seem to understand the notion of a public health crisis, because it's easier for them to say they don't believe it than for them to actually accept it and believe it. And then look at and say, yeah, you know what? These choices that the government has made are difficult and they're requiring sacrifice, but they're required and they're sensible. They'd rather believe that it doesn't exist so that they can go about complaining.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the guy, Adam Skelly, the owner of this barbecue place, he went on a little bit of an Instagram rant, which I believe kind of stirred people enough that even if they didn't want to go to this barbecue place, they went because they knew there was going to be a scene there. And he, I don't know why he put this spotlight on himself, because it doesn't seem to serve his self-interest in the sense that he's, you know, being investigated for things like zoning, public health, business license, fire code regulations. So I don't even think this was a viable business based on that alone. I don't even know if, you know, even without COVID, if he'd be a functioning business.
Well, he doesn't have a business license. They've discovered he's a business without a business license. Usually eateries require business licenses, and he doesn't have one. So this guy's a scofflaw, you know, going way back. And I just get annoyed at these flashpoints that these people create and this notion that we're all living under some kind, that we're all jellyfish, as one of the protesters said, that we have no spines. You know what? It takes more of a spine to recognize and accept sacrifice than it does to cry like a baby.
In defense of your most vulnerable citizens. I'm in a high-risk group for COVID, and this place is not that far from me. You know, and I'm already, you know, kind of edgy about going on public transit, because people even decide not to wear masks on public transit. And, like, I just don't get it. How can they just ignore the fact that people are getting sick? It's not like it's a big grand conspiracy with every single person that's tested positive and gotten sick, or even the amount of deaths that we've had. Like, what? I don't get why all of a sudden their freedom, you know, I'm putting that in air quotes, but their freedom comes before the lives of people who cannot otherwise protect themselves.
Yeah, this is a fine question, because it doesn't, because they're just spoiled, self-indulgent brats. And, you know, the premier of this province, Doug Ford, should be screaming hellfire and brimstone about this guy. But he's kind of like, well, you know, I understand. I feel sorry for the guy. Restaurants. you know, what kind of leadership is that? You wonder why the province is in the shitter. It's a guy like that who seems wishy. He constantly like, don't push me to close the, don't push me. It's like, what are you talking about? Don't push. You're the freaking premier. Take some leadership, for crying out loud. Premiers don't react, they act. And exactly. And then he shows sympathy for this guy. No, I can understand showing sympathy for restaurants that are facing a terrible time now because of all of this. And you know what? The truth is that if we're looking at contact tracing, the science doesn't really support closing indoor dining, because the science shows that indoor dining is not where the majority of the problem is coming from. Most restaurants were very, very good about maintaining social distance, people masking. The restaurants aren't the problem. The biggest problem is places like schools. And yeah. I mean, that's where the science tells us, if you want to shut this thing down, shut down the schools. But he won't do that because that interferes with business, and business are his donors. And so he makes like he's doing something by doing the wrong thing, but he claims he's doing something. And you know, doing something is not the same as doing the right thing. You agree?
Yeah, exactly. And I think overall, Doug Ford has shown extremely poor leadership. He's shown himself in opposition with his top health officials. You know, the health officials, particularly in Toronto, have been saying, lock it back down. Let's ride out this, you know, second wave. Let's try and get ahead of it. But because he's been hesitating and giving mixed messages and things like this, where you, like you said, like he's, you know, almost seeming sympathetic to this guy. And the business is in Etobicoke, which we know is mini Ford Nation. So I think, yeah, he's not going to be seen to be, oh, let's shut down an Etobicoke business, because like middle class Etobicoke voters are the ones who put him in office. So yeah, he's kind of showing his cards a little bit here. But here's the thing, with him showing this kind of sympathy and kind of hedging his bets and not necessarily listening to health officials, that's what inspires these people to say, you know, it's all about the business and you're shutting everyone down and you're hurting small business even more. And then they use that as a reason and kind of a justification to do what they're doing now, which is hold a protest outside of a restaurant, which even if, you know, I haven't checked those facts myself, but the things about indoor dining is not about indoor dining right now anymore, because now you've got a bunch of people who are unmasked grouping together for a protest. I know that some protests in Toronto earlier on in the pandemic, you know, even they were wearing masks and doing their best to kind of distance, or at least wearing masks. But these guys are just not. And they're claiming that it's because of their freedom. And it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous to think that these people who have watched a couple of YouTube videos on the coronavirus know more than the health officials. And Doug Ford is not helping that.
You know, an example of the people supporting this individual, some guy who calls himself on Twitter Shtev, at Shtev69, writes, instead of going after the most wanted, and then in brackets, so many Muhammads, Toronto police move in with force to stop the sale of barbecue meats. And here you have, in one tweet, summed up the way these people think and the way they move forward. First of all, minimizing what's going on as just the sale of barbecue meats. Nobody's stopping him from selling barbecue meats, because you can do that with takeout and curbside. Mm-hmm. So there's no one stopping him from selling barbecue meats. Don't minimize what's going on here. And then this thing about so many Muhammads, he puts up a list of the most pictures of the most wanted from the police. And there's only one guy named Muhammad. So, you know, but there are a lot of people of color, and there are some people of Islamic background who are, some are brown, some are Persian, and some are Spanish, but to him, all of those people are Muhammads.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the attitude. They would rather they go after people named Muhammad than shut down a public health risk. And the truth is, it's not an either or anyways. Police are still always going after the people who are most wanted. I love that it's one of those false dichotomies that, oh, the police are over here, which means they're not over there. No, the police are over here and they're over there, because bylaw officers aren't the people they send to
cut. Yeah, there's more than two cops.
Yeah, they don't send bylaw officers to go after the most wanted people in the city. And it's, I think that they should arrest the people inside the restaurant as well.
Exactly. And this is where it gets a little like malicious for me and insidious, is that I don't think this was about him being able to open up for business, because clearly he doesn't have a business license. He knew he was going to get attention from the police, or at least officials anyway. This was a publicity stunt, because now he's not just a barbecue restaurant, local small business in Etobicoke. He's now a martyr for the anti-mask cause.
Well, I mean, you're right that it was a publicity stunt, because he apparently sold out yesterday.
Exactly.
And he's busier now than he's ever been, because he's serving as a flashpoint. He's serving as like a pop-up headquarters for the loony bin that are the anti-maskers and the COVID is a fraud crowd. He's, yeah, you know, he's serving as a regional clubhouse for these lunatics. And this is, I mean, I guess he's banking on that the fine won't be enough to overcome the amount of extra money he's making, but mm-hmm. they can fine him up to $100,000, which would shut this business down, period. I would probably fine him $100,000, let him take it to court where they'll knock it down. But I would fine him to try to stop others from spreading. I would shut off his hydro. I'd shut off his water. I'd shut off his hydro, and I'd take chains to the door. And if people are stuck inside, so be it.
I don't know if it was him that said it. I have to reread what I read, but there was something about him, like, you know, somebody saying he's going to take this to the Supreme Court. And I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, you're going to take it to the Supreme Court, the right to like endanger people with your really dangerous grand opening plan that you didn't even go through official channels for. Sorry, any court, I'm not a lawyer, but any court who sees a guy who, you know, doesn't have a business license, or at least is under investigation for a bunch of business practices, yeah, they're going to throw it out. But that's, even if they do throw it out, he's already accomplished what he's wanted to, because now the cops or the court throwing him out is just another reason for people to say, yeah, the system's against him and they're holding him down. And it's just, like populism.
You know what the sad thing is that even if this location shuts down, he will open up another restaurant at another location. And for a long time, he will continue to be patronized by the number of people, and there's far too many of them, who are anti-maskers and COVID is a hoaxers. He is set for a while now, because he can take that fine, bankrupt his business, and go open another business somewhere else, and people will follow him, and he'll be a hero to the right. That's what it takes to be a hero to the right these days, is to just do something completely stupid and inadvisable, and you're declared some fighter against tyranny, as opposed to what you really are, which is a typhoid Mary.
Yeah, and exactly. And he's got, you know, him and his followers like yelling and screaming things at the press presence that's there. And, you know, just saying, you guys are corrupt, and you like obviously attacking the press because they're there. And it's like, dude, they're the reason you're getting any attention in the first place. And for you to scream at them as if they're part of this big government conspiracy, you know, you have no problem talking to them when you want to talk about why you're there and, you know, kind of go on the soapbox. But as soon as you're done with that, you're like, you're trespassing. Yeah, because they tried to get the press kicked off the property saying that they were trespassing. And I'm like, oh, no. You brought this attention on yourself, and that with that attention becomes the media like camping out and seeing what you're going to do next.
Well, that was just nonsense. He needs the press there. Are you kidding? He could never in a million years afford the advertising this is giving him. Every camera from the media that is there and reporting on this is telling people who needed a focal point to show their resistance to, you know, common sense. They're telling people, here's your focal point. here's ground zero. Here's where you come to protest. Here's where you come to patronize. Here's where you come to show your disdain for public safety. So they need the press there, though it is a disturbing osmosis effect from Trumpism to turn on the media.
I was just going
to
say that.
Yeah, it's turning on the media. And we're seeing that this is not going to go away with Trump. There are those who believe that the media reporting on something is the media being irresponsible or being in the pocket of somebody or whatever. And there's no question that the media leans right wing, especially the major publications, with the exception of the Star for this week. They lean right wing. There's no question of that. There is a slant, but the idea that there's some left wing slant, no. And the idea that the press reporting on something that's going on means the press is somehow complicit in what's going on? No, they're telling the stories that need to be told, you idiots. There's a great quote here from a woman whose name on Twitter is Four Seasons Total Dead Sea Squirrel. It's at @the_NS. She writes, women have been told for years that we shouldn't go anywhere public after sunset, and we're told to suck it up. Meanwhile, these dumb fucks gathered around Adams and Barbecue are throwing bitch fits because they've been told they can't sit inside a restaurant for 28 days. And I think that's a great place to bring this topic to a close, because that's true. And by the time people listen to this, it may have been resolved. He may be closed. That doesn't take away the validity of the things that we're talking about, because he is a microcosm. He, you know, this isn't about just one restaurant. This is about an attitude that is growing in prevalence as people decide that they're tired of dealing with COVID. And so rather than admitting, look, I'm having trouble with this, they'd rather claim that there's no reason for it to continue. Like, I don't want to have to sacrifice anymore, so I'm going to make up that there's no reason to sacrifice at all. It's growing and it's disturbing. And that's why I'm so glad there's a vaccine on the horizon. No vaccine coming for idiocy, though, or selfishness. I don't know why people aren't working on that. All right. Why don't we talk about Jordan Peterson? Do you want to set this one up?
Oh, dear. Yeah, I do. And it's a lot. So Jordan Peterson, as we know, gained a lot of fame for his 12 rules of life incel manual. Sorry, that's my bias coming through. But now he's coming out with a sequel to that book. And Penguin Random House, after the announcement that they were going to be publishing this, held a town hall for their employees, at which time multiple employees came forward to say that they were in extreme opposition to the publishing of this book. Their argument that they are that it would be platforming an alt-right icon. And, you know, there was this kind of Vice did a really good job. Manisha Krishnan did a really good job reporting on this. They did have anonymous sources, and this is a case where I will make the case for anonymous sources. That said, you know, people were crying, people were emotional, very emotional about in opposition to publishing this book. And a lot of the reaction I saw from this was like, oh, those snowflakes crying about this, about, you know, trying to censor an author and making it a free speech issue. I would argue that it's not a free speech issue. This is a private company. And I think people forget that free speech or freedom of expression in Canada applies to the government and their not having the ability to stamp down, you know, protest or basically saying anything bad about them. We have a company whose employees are kind of in protest about publishing this book. Having read his first book for reasons that...
My God! You'll never get that time back.
No, I won't. And especially as a woman, it scared me a little bit. It does read as like an anxious stream of consciousness a lot of times, which, you know, doesn't surprise me since he just came off of, you know, a year long hiatus.
I'm surprised his book isn't How to Almost Die from Quack Medicine in Russia.
Like, I don't know why he made it very obvious that he was going outside of the country or outside of the continent with way better healthcare system. I don't know why Russia was the place he had to go, but he can stay there as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's like going back to bedrock, you know, for medicine and having the dinosaurs treat you. He goes from first world, fine, you know, good quality medicine to Russia ain't known for its quality medicine. Certainly yeah, not no, for it's individuals. It's practically a third world nation in so many respects.
So what I think is, you know, there is precedent for a company not publishing a book because of the uprising of its employees. And that's Hachette Publishers, who ended up not publishing a book after employee opposition. I do think they are going to move forward with the publication of this book, of Jordan Peterson's book. But my issue is, if I was a publishing house, I wouldn't want him on my roster. Freedom of expression be damned. I think he's a liability. I don't think he's the first writer to obviously have a chemical dependence. I don't even care about. I think I care about, you know, the current political atmosphere and the polarization of it and his role in that. Because something on Twitter that I called him, and it's probably the most accurate metaphor I'm ever going to write. Jordan Peterson is the Peter Pan to the Lost Boys of the incel movement. And well, he didn't start that movement, but, no, but the he is very, like their, he's their messiah. Him. He's their, that book is basically, you know, not a Bible, but it's one of the kind of like essential literatures if you ever want to become alt-right or a white supremacist or a part of the incel movement. If you've ever read his first book or read parts of it, it's extremely anti-woman. It harkens for transportation back to biblical gender roles. And it says that women are too controlled by their emotions, aka too crazy to be in positions of leadership. Because we're too ruled by our emotions.
I'm sorry, I have to laugh.
Yeah.
Because what exactly are these people who are reading his book ruled by? They're all exactly. ruled by their emotions. They're all aggrieved. They're all sad. They're all ruled by their emotions. This is such nonsense. I mean, he got famous, first of all, by saying that he would go to jail instead of calling somebody by the pronoun that they wish to be called by. Mm-hmm. And people rallied around him like he was this great defender, like he was freaking Spartacus or something like that. Meanwhile, nobody goes to jail for calling somebody by the wrong pronoun.
No,
so he made himself out like he was this great martyr, this great, you know, willing to make this terrific sacrifice. So people saw him as a hero when in fact he wasn't a hero at all, because the consequences he was claiming that he was willing to stand up against never existed in the first place. So the man's a grifter. He built on that and wrote these 12 pillars of Hercules bullshit, which I didn't read because I can't get that time back. And I suppose if I was to be responsible, I would read it just to know about it. But I've read enough about it and I've read enough excerpts to know that this guy, and just seeing his conduct, and his public statements, the man is a grifter who's making money on this this movement the same way as that asshole Adam Skelly is making money with his barbecue on the Flat Earth Society people. There's no question that this man is a snake oil salesman and that the snake oil is toxic. I will say, however, that just because people who work at the publishing company don't like it being published, that doesn't mean it shouldn't be published. Because publishing companies, they're not communes. They're not where everybody gets to vote on what gets published. That's not how it works. You're going to find people there who would like, there are other things that they would not like published. And Penguin Random House publishes Mein Kampf, for crying out loud. You could argue that Mein Kampf has less currency these days than something by Jordan Peterson, and that Mein Kampf is out there. Everybody knows what that's all about, whereas there's a lot of dog whistling and coded language in something by a Jordan Peterson, which makes it in present day more potent than Mein Kampf. But listen, there was people who protested when the publishing company that published Howard Stern's books published his books. And I read his books There was nothing terrible in there, nothing that was going to end society, nothing calling for the destruction of a people or anything like that. And you, it's not a democracy, a publishing company. So people being upset, that's not a reason not to publish something.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. I do think that, like, in a cynical view, Penguin Random House knows that this guy sells books. And
well, they're a publisher very that sells money books.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But like, I think they know that he can sell a lot of books and that they want the money. They like,
do you blame them?
No, not necessarily as a capitalist corporation. No, absolutely not. They're in it to make money. And I think this is a pure money decision. They know publishing, physical publishing is in trouble. Let me tell you. But like, so physical print publishing sales have been declining for years. And so Penguin Random House has to do something where I think this is where they say, okay, well, he brings in a lot of money. And so we're going to publish, even if we make up other reasons for wanting to publish this, at the end of the day, it's about the money.
Listen, publishers aren't charities. They don't publish anything they don't think can sell. And you know what? There's a lot of, I mean, you can look at a lot of self-help gurus and their books have things in them that are pretty destructive advice, and yet they're published. And these are, you know, we live in a democracy where there's a free exchange of ideas, and he's not saying we need to chase down the Jews or kill the blacks. He's not, you know, saying anything inflammatory like that. He's putting forward what are allegedly his opinions, and we're not at a point in our society where we're shutting that down. And I don't know that we should shut him down. I think that what was required is people to recognize that he's a grifter and to take to social media and other places to expose the nonsense behind what he says. But I don't think that the guy is telling people to go and do anything particularly toxic. He's poisoning attitudes, and he's actually not poisoning attitudes. People who buy his books already have the bad attitudes. He's cementing attitudes. He's letting people with bad attitudes think that their attitudes aren't bad attitudes, that in fact their attitude is accurate and worthy of being considered respectable. But
yeah,
it's a book, and people have a choice to read it or not read it. And there's a lot of books out there written by people who, you know, the content is not exactly pro-social, but we publish them. You know, people publish them because that's the job of a publisher, is to publish a book that's going to sell.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, Penguin Random House has weighed the pros and cons of publishing this guy. They know they're going to lose support from LGBTQ, from trans people, from, I would say, a lot of women. Because, again, I've read the book. I read the first one. And you cannot come out of reading that book and say that this man is not anti-woman. Honestly, a reviewer that I watched about this book, because I don't, anyway, said, you know, this reads like someone who, because it's a lot of that incel stuff where it's like women will leave you if you don't make money and aren't the most physically good looking and all this other stuff,
which is just honestly nonsense. You can look around to people you know, yeah, and discover this is just nonsense.
So the whole Chad mentality, it definitely helped that. And it does read like someone who honestly, you know, I think that we know he's an anxious person. It reads like someone who's anxious. It also reads as someone who got screwed over by a partner. And, you know, this book was kind of in part a response to that. Now, obviously, I'm speculating. I don't know if he was going through a divorce or the end of a relationship. But it does reek of that. And he's hearkening back to the days. He wants to go back to the days where men ruled the household. But he makes quote unquote reasonable arguments about it, saying that, you know, the Bible had a point about this, this, and this, and we should hearken back to those things. Like, let's leave out the other stuff that the Bible says that we don't like, and then just hearken back to the gender roles where men go out and gather and make money and support the household, and women, you know, bear children and stay in the house. I find his work deplorable. I find him deplorable. Am I going to try and say that Penguin Random House you know, is not going to, I would rather see him not get published. I would rather his filth not be out there. And I do think he is radicalizing people. Like you said, they probably have shittier, you know, people who read him, who want that echo chamber are probably already thinking. Well,
nobody, anybody who doesn't already think that is going to read his book and say, this is a bunch of bullshit.
But they're, it's also validating them. It's saying, you know, here's this, you know, University of Toronto psychology professor who's trying to use his expertise to kind of cement what they're already thinking. It's just lending credibility to them, and it's a problem. And I think what it needs to do, if this is going to be in any way a positive, is it needs to, we need to have more conversation about it. We need more people standing up and saying, this guy is wrong. And he's trying to erase an entire group of people. And so I think you are going to see a lot of people being a lot more vocal about this.
Who do you think he's trying to erase?
Trans people.
I don't know if he's trying to erase them.
Well, no, because he doesn't, by saying that he doesn't want to acknowledge their pronouns, he's also said, like,
well, but he never said he wouldn't acknowledge their pronouns. He said he would consider it. That's the thing. He never came right out and said, I refuse to acknowledge any pronoun except he and she. He never came out and said that. He's cagier than that. He said he would consider the request. And so he's not been resolute in that. So he's not trying to erase trans people. He's not really saying anything specific. And that's the part of what's insidious about it, is he's not saying anything specific. He's saying he'll consider it. Well, okay, that he'll consider it, which means you're not really ruling out the reality of trans people. You're just denying, you might deny some of their pronouns. Right. I mean, listen, let's face it. Right. There really needs to be some standardization of alternative pronouns, because there are far too many alternative pronouns these days. And there really needs to be some standardization of, because there's only so many states of gender, if that's a term. If that, you know, there's only so many types. There's gender fluid, there's non-binary, those things. We need some kind of agreed upon pronoun for each of those things, as opposed to people creating their own. I think that is, now, if someone was to come to me, create some pronoun out of their ass, and say, call me this pronoun, I'd call them that pronoun.
Yeah.
Because what do I give a shit?
But that's the thing, is like, he's not, there's nothing to say that the government is going to knock on your door the minute that you misgender a trans person. But he's not advocating for freedom of speech or non-government oppression. He's campaigning for the right to be an asshole. And unfortunately, misgendering trans people has real world effects. This isn't just a bunch of really sensitive people who want their pronouns said correctly. There are certain connections, certain mental health connections to misgendering trans people that leads to an uptick in suicide for these people. Like, it's not just about, oh, you called me the wrong pronoun and I don't like that and I'm mad about it. No, this has real world consequences for these people. And
well, I mean, there's no question that they're sensitive. There's no question they receive an inordinate amount of bigotry. And a lot of people are very uncomfortable because this is not something that has been normalized yet, mainstreamed enough for people to be comfortable with trans people in the same way that they're comfortable with gay people, which they weren't for a long time. Now people, by and large, are quite comfortable with gay people. They don't give a shit about somebody being gay or not being gay. That's still not the case for trans people. People are still weirded out by it because they don't understand it, and there aren't enough trans people out there to for the critical mass of numbers to just have people encounter it so often that they don't look askance or feel odd as a result of it. There's no question of that. I don't know that every time somebody mistakenly gender somebody or uses the wrong pronoun causes a trans person to feel extra suicidal. Maybe it does. It's the case of where you go and tell somebody, this is my pronoun, and they continuously refuse to use it. That is rejecting who that person is. Making a mistake every now and again, that's not what's being talked about here. What's being talked about here is the right to completely ignore that person's reality. And what I still, just to this day, do not understand why anyone gives a shit, why, what pronoun someone wants to be known by. It might be more difficult to, you know, sometimes when a coworker you've been working with gets married and comes back with a different last name, you may still call them by that old last name. You're not being facetious and you're not refusing to recognize the marriage. You're simply falling into, there's certain patterns and it takes time to break that pattern. But that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about actual mistakes made with no intention to harm. We're talking about people saying that it is their right to simply refuse to accept somebody's reality.
Exactly. But it's also, you're refusing to acknowledge their identity. So one comparison that and this is away from a little bit away from the transgender issue, is that so there was there's a comparison I want to make. And one of the other things that Jordan Peterson really came for was, you know, a business's right to turn down a business from, say, a gay couple. And he used that to whole wedding cake debacle of the people who wouldn't bake a cake for a gay wedding. And Jim Jefferies, a comedian, Australian, said to him, okay, so you don't believe that, you know, this business should be in any way punished, or like they should be able to say, we don't want to make a cake for a gay person based on the fact that they're gay. And so what Jim Jefferies said, he's like, okay, well, civil rights movement, would you also say that it's okay for a business to not serve a person of color based on the fact that they're a person of color? And he goes, of course not. And it's like, okay, well, then your premise of not serving a gay couple doesn't really make sense, does it? And he goes, I guess it doesn't.
Yeah, I watched that clip. It's a good clip.
And I love it because this is a comedian, and you wouldn't necessarily, you know, Jim Jefferies isn't exactly known for this kind of witty interviewing skill. So I thought it was a great clip. And I think it shows how little conviction he has in his own ideas.
Well, he hasn't really thought them through. You exactly. Watch that clip. You know what? Here, let's play that clip.
Making people bake a cake for a gay wedding.
Making them do it?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a very good idea.
But here's the argument. So should they be able to deny making a cake for a black couple if they don't like black people?
Allowed to? Probably. That doesn't mean it's right.
Okay, so then we had the civil rights movement.
Yep.
Where they said black people, you had to serve them in your restaurants and yep. stuff like that. And it did work and it did make our society better. But would yep. you argue that that still wasn't right?
No, that was right.
Why is that different to now if you didn't want to make a cake for black people?
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not different. Yeah. Maybe I was wrong about that.
So it goes to show that he really hasn't done a lot of deep thinking about the ramifications or the consequences of what he's talking about. It's like he made this shit up on the fly, discovered that it got resonance with people, and just never actually bothered. I mean, it hurts his bottom line if he starts thinking.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well,
and you've got people like Joe Rogan. Oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
You've got people like Joe Rogan, who I keep hearing about his podcast, and I really wish I didn't, because I think he's problematic. But, you know, part of the reason that he got really, really, really popularized is that he kept appearing on Joe Rogan's podcast, and he started, you know, marketing him as like this voice of reason and anti-political correctness and things like that. And really, it just started to snowball into something into making him this kind of icon of anti-political correctness, when really it was never about political correctness. This was about a basic human right for a group of people. And I just think that, you know, again, I'm just going to reiterate that I think his views are deplorable. I think his book is horribly written. Take that for what you will from an editor. But yeah, I'm angry for the fact that he's coming out with a second book. I'm not going to try and say whether or not Penguin Random House should publish him or not, but they're going to have to deal with the consequences of publishing him if they do decide to do that.
You know what I think the consequences will be? Nothing. Because boycotts never really work. People, if there's a book that comes out published by them that somebody who's in the LGBTQ community really wants to read, they'll read it. And I think that that's the calculus that that Penguin Random House is using. But you know what? That brings us to the close of the show. There are some other topics we want to talk about, but we'll wait till Hafiz resurfaces. Now, for those who were concerned, Hafiz is not sick. I heard from him during the recording of this, and he slept in. He slept in. That lout.
Hafiz.
That lout. Why I oughta. All right, but he got his dates mixed up and he slept in, and we will make fun of him relentlessly next week.
He's not letting this down. Yeah.
No, this is not going away. Sam Eamon, thank you for joining me on our two-panel program this week. Because I was determined last week we didn't get to do a show. I was determined this week we're going ahead, even if I had to do it alone. So thank you for making sure that I didn't wind up doing it alone, because I hate nothing more than listening to myself talk for a half an hour on end with no interruption. So
thank you for having me.
Always. And thank you guys for listening. If you enjoy this show, well, dig into your pockets. Don't applaud, just throw money, because the pandemic has seen our Patreon drop. As happens, people have less free money, even though, you know, they were paying only $5 freaking dollars a month. I guess every dollar counts when you're scraping by. So I don't begrudge them that. But those of you who've got $5, come on. You got $5. I'm talking to you. You know you have $5 that you can put towards supporting these programs. Every month, $5, $1.25 a week. I mean, when you take money out of an ATM, it charges you more than $1.25. So you're willing to enrich the big banks who get richer and richer. You can throw $5 our way. And you can do that by going to PayPal and contributing on PayPal at funetworktv@gmail.com. Or you can give us every month $5. I know, huge sacrifice for you. Don't piss in my ear and tell me it's raining. You can afford $5. You go $5 a month at Patreon. It's patreon.com/funetworktv. So go do that. In fact, do that now. Because if you're thinking about it and you don't do it now, you won't do it. So do it now. Here, I'll wait. Okay, I'm not going to wait, but you go and do it. And that's it. This has been Socket to Politics on the Fun Network.